This is the June 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor from Bloomington, Illinois, Elaine Cubb of ElaineCubb.com out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and from University of Minnesota, agricultural economist Ed Ussett. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Of course, you're listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Now let's get started with our program. We'll start with Ed Ussett, who is from University of Minnesota and an agricultural economist there. Ed, thanks for being with us today. Can you take us through USDA's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates and some of the changes they made for the day, please?
Sure, Todd. I'd be glad to. Let's take a look at just a couple of highlights. Corn, they came out with a very pleasant increase in exports for the current crop year of 100 million bushels, and that pretty much all came out of the ending stocks. There's no change in yield or production for this year or the year ahead for corn, soybeans, either one of them. So a nice increase in the export forecast and another increase of 50 million bushels for next year too, the 16-17 crop year. Soybeans, they decreased ending stocks by 30 million bushels in the current crop year due to a modest increase in crush and 20 million bushel increase in exports. And that spilled over into 2016 and 17. We've got a decrease of 45 million bushels, bringing ending stocks for the 2016-17 crop year to 260 million bushels, which is impressive, Todd, being where we had 400 million bushels or higher just months ago in our head. That's quite a bit lower. On the bearish side, these were friendly numbers on corn and soybeans. On the bearish side was wheat, where USDA has raised its production and yield estimates for the crop year coming up. We're going to, the crop year that just started, we're going to set a record yield in U.S. wheat, mainly due to improved prospects for the winter wheat crop. So we've got a sort of a bearish scenario that continues to play out in wheat, kind of offset by bullish scenario in corn and soybeans.
Dale Durkles, as you look at these numbers and think about the strength that soybeans have shown, this is the ninth week, the longest, I guess, since in 43 years.
That was 1973. Let's make that plain.
Yeah, so a long time ago, and it was 73. What do you think about these numbers?
Well, the numbers themselves, the thing I'm starting to worry about or becoming somewhat concerned about, I kind of wonder if the USDA finally hasn't what I call drank the Kool-Aid as far as soybean exports are concerned. You know, for years they've gone along where they've tended to underestimate those numbers early on, and this time around, starting back in May with the new crop in particular, they've become real aggressive, and now you really start to wonder, are we really getting a little bit ahead of the curve? In other words, maybe some point down the road we find exports don't live up to expectations. So, you know, the numbers are what they are. I don't know that we can say much. I will say I think demand is pretty well dialed in at this point in time. But that really leaves the key unknown. How many acres did we actually plant this year, and what kind of yield will we have?
Our thought was that Elaine Cubb, if there were many changes, it might happen out west. You're essentially located closer to that than we are, so I'll ask you that question. Was there any reason to change acreage there?
Not yet. I will say that I've made several trips through this region in sort of northeast Nebraska, southeast South Dakota, and northwest Iowa, where there are fields, even today, that are sitting there unplanted. There are pockets, like a couple of pockets, kind of central South Dakota, where nothing has been planted. And I think today, for some of these counties, this is the day that the farmers can decide, well, I just won't plant anything and I'll take prevented plant. So there is some prevented plant, but I don't think it's probably widespread enough to be a major market mover, even like it has been in the past, you know, 2 or 3 years. This is just sort of a localized story. But to answer your question, yes, I think there is opportunities in upcoming months for USDA to look at the acreage number for soybeans. Just obviously not today.
We'll talk about the opportunities and what acreage will look like when we get to the end of the month of June. Of course, United States Department of Agriculture will release its next acreage report then. Before then, though, Merrill Crowley, futures have offered some opportunities. I think most brokers and many of the trade advisories would suggest, sometimes too early for soybeans at this point. But if there are producers who are looking at the prices today, 9 weeks up in the soybeans, corn cash prices at $4. Do they need to take advantage of this in some way, in your opinion?
Well, that's going to be up to the individual farmer. I think that we are nearing some cycle times where we could see these grains at least back up and retrace. And then the problem is going to be, if they retrace, what are we going to do? Are we going to look at it as the high, or are we going to be able to rebuy and see warmer weather kick us back higher? I'm thinking you take advantage as much as you can with the prices. If we do back off, look for some calls to buy and protect yourself that way. At this stage in the game, it's, you know, kind of iffy. Looking at the weather, I don't know. It just seems to me right now we have pretty much the second warmest spring going on right now, and that's in comparison with 2012. We know what happened that year. The highest spring temperatures relative history occurred in the northwest and much of the northern tier. However, our precipitation seems to be running about an inch above 20th century average, and we are at the nation's 18th wettest spring in the 120-year database. So if we keep getting rains, and the temperatures I'm seeing forecasted out into the future, into July, I'm saying that this would probably be a top.
Ed Usett, I want to come back to something with you that I know you've written about, and I think it, I don't know whether you call it a rule of thumb, on old crop corn, but that you don't want old crop corn in the bin after July. What do you tell producers this year?
Same thing, that July 1 is it's sort of arbitrary. It's not arbitrary, but it's sort of it's a little harder date than it needs to be. But basically, by the end of June, you got two forces working against you. One is the tendency for new crop futures to go lower from spring to harvest. That's it's a strong tendency. It's not infallible, but it tends to go lower. And on top of that, you've got a basis tendency, which also tends to go lower. Now, I have to say, Todd, this year, basis is already starting from a very low level. It's hard to imagine it can get much worse than that. But we've had a nice rally here. Everybody with old crop grain in the bins got a wonderful opportunity to make some sales.
And is that still that opportunity, I take it, is still in place, in your opinion?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I traveled all winter telling people, let's hope for a rally. Let's hope for a rally. It's here. Time to get something done.
Dale Durkles, your thoughts?
You know, I won't disagree with Merrill. You know, we had nearby futures get back to the high we put in the market last summer. And to me, the corn market has unfolded in such a fashion that it's gotten to a point where it is time to reward the market. Yeah, you make old crop sales. You make a little bit of new crop here at this point in time. You start putting some money in your pocket to start to pare your risk. But overall, when I look at the cyclic structure of the corn market itself, you know, and also the pattern of the rally that we've had out of the low back at the beginning of April, I still think that there's probably going to be another push higher yet at some point in time. But I think in the very immediate period, I think there is risk we could have some decline into early July, maybe into those reports we have at the end of this month before we turn it up again.
Elaine, come, there's an awful lot, I think, it seems to be riding on this hot weather that we're getting at the moment. For a very long time, we wondered whether the market will begin to build in any kind of weather premium in the United States. That would have been a couple of months ago. And now it seems like that it's really decided that this is the point at which it wants to do that. However, we're in the middle of June rather than the middle of July. We have a very long distance to go. And as far as the corn crop goes, we're not really in a critical position for it at this point, especially given the rainfall. Will we set back in the marketplace over the next week? And has the market timed this incorrectly?
I'm with you, Todd. Like, I really can't get too worked up about the hot weather when the corn is at the stage it's at now. You know, it's not soaking yet. This is probably going to reduce your yield potential. So it's no longer 100%, but what, maybe 99%. This is not critical these few hot days. So, yeah, I don't think that the market even looked at it that way. The market was looking perhaps at these other numbers. So hopefully, yeah, it won't get set back by the rain that we are hopefully going to see in the next few days. But I will say, we do look, and Merrill sort of hinted at this also about the weather longer term. We look at a switch perhaps to La Nina or something later in the year, sort of in August when soybeans are in a critical stage. That's the kind of long-term forecast that the markets could be looking at. And, I mean, so when I look at this, I think USDA said 14.4 some billion bushels of corn. That's probably going to happen. Ed is probably right that you ought to get something done here before the end of July, of June for corn. But for soybeans, I think there may still be some risk in that August time frame of another weather rally.
Ed, are you of an opinion that we need to think a little bit about the soybeans and what that might mean for producers for the new crop?
This market is anticipating a whole lot, and we're trying to kill the crop on the 10th of June. I suspect in the weeks ahead, and frankly, we're doing it right now. I think we're going to see changes in the market in the weeks ahead, not based on today's weather, but on the weather we anticipate 2, 3, 4 weeks out. We're already trading. We're trying to kill this crop right now, and a lot of anticipation over hot and dry, and it may show up, Todd. I don't know. I'm not a weather guy, but if it doesn't, you know, the crop is frankly off to a nice little start. You know, we got a few late planting areas, but we've always got minor issues somewhere, and if the rains show up, we're going to look back at this in 4 to 6 weeks and wonder why we didn't pull the trigger on something while we had the opportunity.
What is a 2 billion bushel corn crop and a 260 million bushel soybean carryout, worth in your mind rather than the prices we're trading today?
260 million bushel carry out in soybeans would still be one of the larger ones we've had over the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, and that's based on today's good news. So it's not, if I'm a soybean buyer in the U.S., I'm not anticipating a difficult time getting my hands on soybeans. And, you know, I look at the new crop bean market up 33% from its early March lows. We got to get something done when an opportunity like that shows up.
Dale Durkles, is there a reason to protect sales that have been made?
At the moment, I really don't think so. There are a couple of things in the mix in here that I think are really important and something that people really need to dwell on. First off, we go back here, you know, just – just a couple of years ago, the end of 14, or just a year ago, the end of 14-15, we had 191 million carryout. We had a 10-cent average price paid to farmers. I'm speaking of, if you go back earlier, we found, you know, carryouts somewhat similar, stocks of use somewhat similar, and yet prices that are not a lot different. For example, you go back to 07-08, we had a 205 million carryout and we had a 10-10 average price paid to farmer. I think one of the things nobody's touched on here yet today, when you look at beans, the peak we put in July beans today, 38% retracement on the nearby futures chart, and it went right up to it, and as soon as it hit it, it just sagged away from it just as quickly. The new commitment of traders report we had here this afternoon, you know, that's as of last Tuesday. We still have these big managed money, the big trading funds, that's still holding this huge long position in beans. So what you have to worry about in beans is that if the market would erode enough to get into their stops, you don't have much below this market until you get about a buck lower. And once you tend to turn the market down and you tend to push your speculative money out, it's work to get it rebuilt again too. So that's why I think, you know, when you look at the market today in beans, you know, it's an opportunity. I don't see a need right now to protect upside risk at this juncture yet.
Merrill, there usually is a time somewhere June, July, where the market simply drops. It's based on the coming crop and the size of it. It's usually sometime in July. And the need for producers to eliminate either corn, sometimes soybeans, but not so much, that are left in the bin. Is there much left out in the countryside, and does this worry you?
I think most of the beans are probably in the commercial hands. I'd say the majority of the farmer-owned beans are probably still out in the west. And prices do move when they get into the commercial's hands. Does it worry me right now? No. But when you're looking at a 6.6% stocks to use, and if I remember right, I think the year we had the 100 million, we were looking at a 4.4. If that was to come to fruition, then I think, you know, you're going to see prices move much higher. In the meantime, though, you're looking at the trade already saying that La Nina has killed the South American crop next year. The U.S. doesn't have a crop this year. And so, you know, everybody seems to be jumping on this bandwagon. And I think it was a good point made by Dale, and Ed made some very good points about where we're at right now in pricing. So I'm not as worried about where the stocks are at right now as much as I'm worried about where the beans are going to come from if we're going to get the yields. And right now, that's why I'm focused more on the weather. The amounts of rain that we're going to get next week, I think, will have a big deciding factor in whether or not we're going to see this yearly high come to fruition.
Let's switch topics just a little bit, Elaine Cubb, and talk a bit about wheat. Ed Usett told us that it was the bearish side of the USDA's report this morning. How bearish were those numbers?
Well, they really weren't a huge adjustment to the global or the U.S. ending stocks to use ratios here. I mean, we're talking like 67% stocks to use ratio globally. Like, that's 50% in the U.S. So basically half of the wheat that we're growing in the U.S. does not have a place to go. But there, you know, when you look beyond those numbers, there are some subtleties. And Ed will appreciate this up in Minnesota, is that I think the spring wheat market probably has some more opportunities than the winter wheat market. The winter wheat market is really what was dragging the numbers and the whole market down today because of, you know, these very favorable yield reports, and we're seeing from the harvest favorable yield, favorable test weights, but poor protein. So I think there is going to be a greater need for the spring wheat to get, you know, blended in at the miller's side. And also there is this drought continuing in Alberta and creeping over into Saskatchewan, and Canada has very low wheat stocks. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on that can be more bullish for spring wheat than for winter wheat.
On the winter wheat crop size, because we have so much, and that without a home, Will it be a burden to the corn in particular? It might even good quality wheat become feed wheat?
You know, we did see that on the USDA tables today, is that they increased the feed wheat usage. And I'm wondering how much this ought to be related to the tightness in soybean meal. You know, the poultry sector, they're turning to wheat perhaps as a substitute for this very high price or very tight stocks situation in soybean meal. So I think corn has more of an opportunity here alongside wheat rather than getting kicked out of the way by wheat.
You know, one thing to think about, the USDA is plugged in, Todd, 200 million as far as feed consumption is concerned on the new crop wheat itself, you know, and we've had years in the past where we fed wheat, where we fed over 400 million bushel. And I think given the price relationship that we have this year, it's certainly a doable thing this time around for wheat feeding to really be fairly robust, fairly significant going forward through the winter. The other thing you have to think about, depending on, you know, where you are in the world, the same thing would be in play at this juncture too. And, you know, wheat, which is highly fed throughout the world, much more than what we do here in the U.S., we should start to see the fruits of this price relationship encouraging wheat feed consumption throughout the world, quality notwithstanding.
All right. A final quick word from each of you. I think, Merrill Crowley, I'll start with you from Crowley Commodities.
Yeah, I'm looking for this market to make a peak in here. Whether it's viable or not will depend on the weather. And I think we ought to take advantage of some of these prices, because I'm afraid, like Ed was pointing out, we may get past this point in time and say, I wish I'd have done something.
Ed Usett with the Center for Farm Management at the University of Minnesota.
Well, I'll shift gears just a bit and remind people, as you get as bullish as you do, and I'm no predictor of the weather, it may continue to go higher and higher, but look at the nearby and new crop basis levels for cash, corn, wheat, soybeans. They're all weak, and in the case of corn and soybeans, very weak nearby, and that's not an indicator of a robust market. The futures and the cash are separating.
Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska.
Well, as always, keep one eye trained on volatility in the U.S. dollar, but especially in these next couple of weeks when you've got the British Brexit sort of vote coming on.
And Dell Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington.
You know, the one thing I'm keeping an eye on, well, there's actually two, it's price cycles. And beans, I have an important price cycle coming, a low coming due here at the beginning of July. But also, when you look at the broad commodity structure, the broad commodity indices, they have a semiannual low due here as we move into July itself. So to me, there's going to be a market set up for some kind of a downward correction before we see higher prices come along the way.
Okay, anything that we didn't cover that we should have?
I'm curious about how many people are going to look at how much acreage we're going to see either increase or decrease corn and beans.
Anybody got thoughts?
You know, that's one of the elephants in the room right now in trying to figure out what the USDA is going to tell us at the end of the month. You know, I go back to the March and I look at a total acreage package of all crops. And to me, the numbers fit together, and I was plugging in at that particular point about a 2.5 million acre prevent plant. And I don't know, even with some of these weather issues like Elaine talked about out west, or we've got a few that have been in the eastern Corn Belt, that 2.5 million prevent plant really is that far off the mark. The one thing I think that people miss on this acreage situation, and I've heard people talk about bean acres being up nearly 3, let's go to 85 million acres, is that, you know, the bean rally really started to accelerate when we hit May. And by then we already had over half the corn in the ground. So, you know, you really question, you know, is there going to be a lot of switching away from corn into beans at that point? You've already got fertilizer down, et cetera. So the price was there in one sense. The price shift was there to tell people to make the shift from corn into beans. But one of the problems you have once you get nitrogen down on on acreage for corn, if you plant beans into behind it, you have this issue where you tend to get good, robust vegetative growth, but they don't pod all that well either. So, yeah, I don't know that we're going to see as big a shift as what some people want to think right now.
I'm with you there that the timing of it is like maybe a loss of soybean acreage, but not a switching situation.
Yeah, you know, I've plugged in 1.5 million less corn acres, and I think that's a doable number. I heard enough switching. We had the problems down in the Mid-South early on with the wetness and the delays. So, you know, but
yeah.
1.5 million less corn, you know, and all of that may not end up in beans either. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe we can see 84 million acres. I haven't really pushed a pencil real hard on the numbers yet, but I think the 85 is a little much.
Just personally, I was thinking about 1 million less on the corn. Some of it would probably go to prevent plant. I don't think there'd be too much. But all in all, there's going to be less prevent plant. How much of the 1 million acres will switch to beans, I'm not sure. We're looking at an earlier wheat harvest, so I'm thinking we're going to see more beans after wheat. Again, your weather's going to figure in on your yield on that. If we go straight dry, you're not going to see many beans come from that. And then the final thing is what I would call the ghost acres. We had about 1.38, about 1.4 million acres that were just left off of the planting sheet from last year to this year. And that's not uncommon when you see the price change. But the price came back, like you said, it came back in May. So I'm thinking some of those acres will come back in. I guess I'm penciling in like 2.5 million more bean acres.
You know, that's the real question, what happens with the ghost acres, and that's a difficult one to really put your finger on. I've looked back at, you know, prices and aggregate planted acreage as well as prevent plant and CRP acres and everything, and you do see a lot of volatility year to year and all of that. So it's always difficult to really just say, you know, how many acres did or did not get planted. Part of that's, you know, weather in various parts of the country, et cetera. I just think 85 million is a stretch in beans at this point, but I am concerned, and this comes from a technical parameter. I have a fairly important cycle low in the way I count them, due right around the first part of July. I am somewhat concerned that we do get something come along the way in beans, and it might have to be acres. It's a little bit more negative than people are looking for.
Yeah, I agree.
The bean thing
are coming in.
Yeah, the bean thing to me, I can't reinforce enough. Everybody's kind of forgotten, and I know all of us are aware. You know, the highs today, that was $3.50 above the low we had last winter.
That's a hell of a move.
And the reason you started up the program, Todd, and with this comment, and I don't know where it came from today. I saw it too. You know, the strongest soybean market we've had in 43 years. Oh, it came off Bloomberg. I'd heard it was Bloomberg too. But anyway, the strongest soybean market in 43 years. That's why I said that was 1973. That was a whole different environment. And the only year that's comparable to 1973 in terms of market performance is 2008. You know, this year is no way comparable to what happened in 1973. So to start using that as a comparative tool to me to 73 is just coming way out of left field, and you got to be real careful. The amount of money we've actually got, the hedge fund long position in beans right now, when you look at futures and options combined, I think it is larger than it was in 2012.
Wow.
People don't understand. What?
I hadn't seen the report this week on the CFTC, so it's up there now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I look at futures and options combined, that's on the disaggregated report. You know, and what people don't understand is how much money has played a part in the market up to now. But the other thing you have to worry about is the downside of it.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a lot of risk.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing below the market for a buck. And once you blow out a market, it takes a long time to rebuild it again. And I'm not saying we won't go higher, because I see long-term cycles that look good for the grains, and I generally am positive all the way into 2017. But, you know, if I'm sitting here right now and thinking about what I'm going to do over the next 6 months, beans to me are a good sale up here.
Yeah, and all our prices are doing now is look at how much more acres we're encouraging in South America. So if we don't have the weather problem here and don't have the weather problem there, we could be right back in the same situation we saw at the beginning of this year.
Thoroughly possible. I don't see it because of price cycle structure. I'm talking about big cycles. But, you know, I do see the risk in the next few months in here with beans, much more so than I see it in corn, because of what we've done to the ratio between corn and soybean prices too.
Right. Well, and you got more competition with the corn, more bushels, more competition.
Right.
But I like the Lane's point about as we start to feed this wheat and you get, that's a higher protein source. One would think that that's going to help soften the blow on the need for soybean meal.
It could start to have an impact. There's no doubt about it at this point.
One thought on the wheat feeding, something that doesn't show up in the numbers. I know that the wheat-corn ratio speaks to higher wheat feeding. I won't disagree with that. But there's another factor that the numbers don't capture, and that's wheat quality. And our biggest wheat feeding years are, not only do you have a low price of wheat relative to corn, they're comparable, but you've got a quality issue in wheat, particularly maybe soft wheat and maybe a little bit in hard red winter wheat, a quality issue that brings in tremendous discounts and makes it even cheaper. That doesn't show up in the numbers. I don't
right.
know if we have that, those quality issues this year.
Well,
oh, and in Europe, there are all kinds of wet and quality issues and funguses and such. So there's another area of soft feed wheat that's
mm-hmm.
going to get a lot more on there.
Good point. I've got a U.S. perspective here. I don't
yeah.
know where the poor quality is coming in on the U.S. side.
Well, in the U.S., in terms of wheat feeding, by and large, when you look at it, it's more of a cattle issue in the plains.
Mm-hmm.
Feed yards where we actually year in, year out feed more often than not the wheat. And it creates odd biases in the quarterly balance tables, because once you put a pen of cattle on wheat feed, you feed that pen of cattle wheat all the way through to the end.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like to change it. An old cattle person told me that years ago, and it's only been reinforced by people since. So, you know, If prices are such, and I had heard today that some places out west in Texas, southern Kansas, they were trying to swap out some corn for some wheat, but they were getting some pushback on their corn commitments, you know, and people not wanting to back up on them because they already had the corn scheduled to come in down there. But still, if the wheat's abundant, if wheat stays cheap relative to corn, what happens? They go out, they buy enough wheat during the harvest or during the summer season, during your seasonal lows, with the intent that I feed X number of pens or however many cattle out until those cattle are finished out and gone. So you see this wheat feeding end up being counted early.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see odd negative residuals on it when you get into the winter. It's weird how it works, but we've gotten used to it. But I think the USDA with their 200 million bushel wheat feeding, I think they're being a little slow on the mark, but it may be a quality issue that we're just not readily ready to accept at this point yet. And what you're talking about with the quality issue with wheat over in Europe and a couple of other places, Elaine, I mean, that can have some residual positives as far as wheat export demand out of the U.S., which has actually been a problem for us the last couple of years.
Yeah. Absolutely, yep.
All up, all done? Just glad I could ask some questions.
Ha, 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 ha.
It's nice to have a fun little discussion, though.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. I'll take it and put it all up on the web.
All right.
Very shortly.
Great show, Todd.
Talk to you later, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.